This podcast is brought to you by Money Control.
Hello and welcome to Simply Save, Money Control's very own personal finance podcast that talks about all things money. I'm Kaizad Adajania. We continue our coverage and conversations on the Franklin Templeton case. The Gujarat High Court has issued a stay order on the e-voting process, and the Delhi High Court had sent a notice to the fund house, SEBI, and the trustees of the fund house seeking an explanation. What do the petitioners want? Why are the petitioners angry? And is it right for a handful of investors to get a stay order on redemptions when there are so many other investors involved, perhaps even wanting Templeton to get ahead with the winding up process? In our special podcast today, we talk to the two lawyers who have taken the fight all the way to the doorstep of Franklin Templeton. We're joined by Paritosh Gupta. He's the lawyer representing the Ahmedabad petitioners. And this case that was heard in the Gujarat High Court got the stay order against the e-voting. We also are joined by Abhinav Srivastava from Delhi, who has been fighting the case in Delhi High Court. So hi, Paritosh and Abhinav, and thank you for joining us on our podcast. Paritosh, let me start with you first. You know, in your arguments, in your petition, you have argued that, you know, there appears to be two regulations, Regulation 39 and Regulation 1850C. 1850C specifically, you said, says that unit holders' prior approval is necessary. Okay, but there is a Regulation 39, as you very well know, which Templeton has fallen back on, saying that, you know, as per that regulation, either the trustee's approval or the board's approval or the unit holder's approval is necessary. So what first alerted you to the fact that that there are these two, appears to be a duality in regulations? Templeton says that there is no duality. Okay. But what alerted you to the fact that there is an 1815C also, which talks about winding up, which has to be taken in conjunction with 39? And unit holder's approval is in fact required before you wind up the scheme.
Absolutely. So both the regulations, according to me, are not in conflict. Okay. So it is not a case of any duality per se.
Okay.
As we read it, of course, it's a subject matter of how the court will decide subsequently. But as we read it, 1815C provides for a precondition, a prerequisite for the consent whenever the opinion of trustees is to wind up the scheme.
Okay.
The regulation 39 provides for winding up of the scheme if the trustees are of the opinion. Now, if you look at 1815C, it clearly talks about whenever the trustees are of the opinion that the scheme is required to be wound up, you please go and take consent.
Okay.
So, according to me, there is no conflict. 39 provides for three modes of winding up.
Okay.
One mode is you take predominant 75% approval of the unit holders. Then there is a direction by board, which has happened in few cases. And then there is a route where the trustees are of the opinion that the scheme is required to be wound up. 1815C only kicks in when the trustees are of the opinion that the scheme is required to be wound up.
Okay, so it's a precondition. So
that's when it comes in. That's when it comes in.
Okay.
Now, as to how we got to the point of finding out 1815C was that normally, if you look at this thing, it's an amount invested by all the unit holders. The amount is held by the AMC and the trustees in the form of a trust as a service provider.
Yeah.
Now, if you're thinking about taking any major decision which would have a serious implication of the amounts which are invested, leaving aside the investment that they do as per the protocol of the document, but if they're thinking of taking a major decision, I think it should be put before the person whose money is at stake. And that is exactly what is in spirit in 1815C.
Okay.
Take the consent. You put the relevant information to the unit holders. Let them decide.
Okay. Abhinav, many people say, and in fact, Templeton is saying that, you know, in the communication that it has given to investors, it said that it had no choice. This was the measure of last resort because there is so much of illiquidity in the market. They already sold the kind of papers that they had to sell. Now they can't sell any further, so they have to wind up the scheme. Do you really believe in your assessment of things, Abhinav, that this was indeed the final thing that they could have done, or could they have done more?
See, it is obviously something that has to come up in the forensic audit, but it appears from all the articles that you guys have done and all the research that we've done that this is not something that one event has caused, right? The illiquidity of the market that they're trying to pin the whole thing on is just a hogwash. They're just trying to get out of their own mistakes that they've done. And it's a series of mistakes from the past 2 years that they've been making bad decisions. They could have got out of bad securities, high-risk securities, and they did not do that. And that has caused them to, you know, and this event has, COVID has landed in their lap, and they're just trying to use it, you know, to get out of the whole thing so that they can actually wind up the scheme without even returning the money of the unit holders right now, especially short-term bonds. Yeah.
No, but given that you are saying that they did whatever they did, okay, invest in illiquid securities more than what they ought to have done, et cetera, et cetera, which led them to this point where you're saying that they cannot just blame COVID and get out of it. It's their past mistakes, you're saying, which have caught up with them. But given the fact that this has happened, now, you know, going ahead from here, at this point, whatever that they have come, whatever they may have done in the past, they're saying that, you know, this is the last resort. They've already borrowed a lot of money also from the banks. So even if they get money by selling their underlying securities, they will have to first repay that loan to the banks and then start repaying to investors. So the argument on the other side is that this is whatever has happened, this is the measure of last resort right now. Do you buy this?
So obviously, that is something that the courts will have to look into it after the forensic audit, because that is something that will really clear out the issue as to whether there has been any mismanagement on their part. See, understand, it's a trust issue because the money that was with them was held in trust.
Yeah.
And they ought to have invested it in a particular manner in with the all the trust that was enforced on them, that people have invested all the money, their life savings in them. They could not have gone ahead and being callous about it.
Okay.
So now, just to say that because we are stuck in this situation, they can't wash their hands off this problem.
Okay.
There has to be a solution that they pay off all the people, and then whatever the problem is, maybe there is illiquidity and you've bought bad securities, you've done that. So you suffer the blame, not the unit holders.
Okay. You're saying the money was should not be waiting for like 3, 4, 5 years.
5 years. Yeah. 5 years. Possibly 5 years. Okay. I don't know. They're saying 5 years for short-term bonds. Okay. There are people who are dependent on this for medicines. 15,000 they were taking out for their regular medicines, senior citizens. You're expecting them to wait for 5 years to get their money back. That's really bad, because if you are holding the money in trust, you can't invest in securities which are below credit. Just because you want to get ahead in the market and show that you're doing really well, you can't keep everything on the back burner, or the regulations, the circulars that are given by SEBI and everything. You can't do that.
Okay.
You have to be, you know.
Careful. Okay. Right. Right. Paritosh, you know, you've argued right from the beginning that unit holder's consent is required in this particular case, okay, when it comes to winding up the schemes. Financial planners who I've been speaking to, some of them are of the opinion that unit holders may not be in a position to make the right choice.
Just on a lighter note, it's as good as saying that tomorrow some advisor may say that public at large may not have the relevant information or may not be in a position to decide who the leader of the country is. Should we take away the vote from them? I do not understand. First of all, I do not agree with that. If all the relevant information is shared.
Okay.
Now the trustees, AMCs are in a position to explain the situations to the unit holder. And that is what was required. What was required was that all the relevant information, you have problems, all right. You have the problems, show it to the unit holders, put it to them. That if you force us to act on the redemption, we will have to sell all the assets at a very discounted value. End of the day, you are going to suffer. Why not put it to the unit holders before taking the call of winding up?
Okay.
So as I read it, as I read the provision, this consent is mandatory. And I do not foresee how this invaluable right of consent can be taken away from the unit holders whose money is at stake.
Okay.
Now, And we also have to understand it is not that each and every investor is to be convinced with a certain way forward. It's a majority decision of the unit holders which has to be taken.
But you're saying whatever it is, you have to ask the unit holders and let them make the choice whether they want to sell this.
Absolutely. So you're saying that relevant information to them.
Put the necessary information in front of them. Yeah.
Absolutely.
You failed their trust. Now at least trust them to make the right decision.
Okay.
End of the day, correct, not correct. It is the unit holders who have to decide how to move forward. One more thing that Abhinav was also sharing. I think the relevant issue is how have we reached here? As to, you would have seen a circular of the board issued, I think, in May 2016, where they have given some clarifications regarding right of restricting redemptions for a fund house. Now, market illiquidity is one of the reasons where they can suspend redemption for some time.
Hmm. Yeah.
But the board clarifies that this illiquidity has to be on the whole, as in the entire market is supposed to suffer from such illiquidity and not few investments. So if it is on account of bad investments, you can't even place suspensions. Now that principle would apply here as well. Now that is why this audit is very important. One will have to scrutinize as to whether we have reached this stage because of COVID, as they claim, or whether we have reached this stage because of bad investment, reckless investment, whatever may be the case, by Franklin. If the report comes out and says that whatever Franklin did was fair, all the investments were proper, then the investors would have to decide how to move forward. They will have to accept the fate and move forward. But if the report comes and if the scrutiny reveals that there were reckless investments by Franklin, then I think the unit holders would be correct to claim that the AMC or the trustees has to have to bear the losses and not the unit holders.
Okay.
So I think the pertinent question is not that what to do forward. You have to first figure out how have we reached here.
How did we
and
reach?
It is only then we'll be able to decide how to move forward.
Okay.
I just wanted to add to what Paritosh is saying.
Yeah.
See, if the underlying securities were good, there is a special fund that RBI has created for liquidity.
Okay.
So if the securities were actually something of value, they could have gone to the banks and asked for loans for that liquidity, for, you know, sailing through this phase of the market, as they are suggesting. Mm. But the problem, underlying problem, which is there, is that the investments were not of that quality. There are figures I've seen from your articles, Kezad, that there are figures that they are investing 28% with credit ratings which are less than 1A, and they are 44% in riskies. In their different schemes, they are like 44% where other funds are investing 10%. So you are obviously investing recklessly, right? Which is has to be looked into by the auditors.
What about financial advice? I mean, when you're talking to your clients, individuals who have invested in these funds, and obviously, of course, the matter has come up now, but we've known for a long time that they are, in fact, the risk profile of these funds have been quite higher than other funds in the same category, if outside the credit risk funds that you take. So when advisors advise these funds to investors, what is the responsibility of the advisors to ensure that they do their advice properly, they do the risk profiling of the client properly to ensure that, let's say, Abhinav, in your case, when you're talking about a senior citizen who depends on the inflows of the funds for his or her medical needs, not everything is invested in such risky products. What's the role of an advisor?
So first of all, Ghazad, are short-term debt funds risky as compared to other mutual funds?
On That's paper, the question. No, definitely no.
So that's what. So if I do not have an advisor, if I do not have the capacity to afford an advisor, and I see that, you know, instead of investing in sovereign bonds or, for example, FDs, I see that everybody is talking about mutual funds, that, you know, mutual funds are sahi hai, and we go ahead and invest in something that gives us a better return, and we see the safest option in that. We trust that the person who's actually somebody like Franklin Templeton would be investing in safe securities. So that's how it goes about, right? When you're thinking about old citizens, senior citizens, or people who are retired and invested all their pension funds into this instead of sovereign bonds. So we have to consider that also, right? It's not just the financial advisors. There are people who do not hire financial advisors.
Okay.
They go by websites or go by, you know, things that they read.
Okay.
So you can't blame the financial advisors or individual unit holders for the follies of aggressive, investments that the the company is doing. Right?
Okay.
Just because you want to go be ahead of the curve, show that you are doing so well.
Paritosh, what if this matter gets delayed? I mean, there are a number of cases being filed. First, it was you, then there were two other cases. I mean, people are, a section of investors are raising their voices. Large other section of investors who are not involved in the court cases, they might want a quicker resolution. Do you think this might delay the process, the court cases, or do you think it's a necessary thing that people have to go through?
Let's look at the process as per Franklin. According to their maturity portfolio, which they've released for on May 29th, I think.
Yeah.
In best circumstances, they'll be able to return money in which may start from a month from now for a few schemes till up till 2 to 5 years. So it is not something where people will start getting predominant amount of money in few months. It is not that case. And even that maturity portfolio depends on a lot of things, a lot of favorable circumstances. So scrutiny by a court, or let's even talk about SEBI right now, which may go on for a few months, will really not derail the entire winding up process. And we may also understand one thing. There is a apprehension on part of a lot of investors that this may go on for years together. It is not that kind of case. Okay. Normally go on for some time. But cases where larger public interest is involved, things do move quite quickly. Let's take our timeline, what has happened in the present case. On 3rd of June, the first order was passed in our favor.
Okay.
After that, if I'm not wrong, there was a weekend as well. But Franklin was able to move an application for vacating that stay, which was then listed on the 8th, heard the entire day. And the judge was gracious enough to, in fact, give the order that very evening because she realized that the next day the meeting was there.
Yeah.
Now, Franklin has also challenged that order in the Supreme Court. It is also very likely that it will be listed in coming few days. We are not very sure of the date, but it will come up in few days. So if you look at the timeline, things are moving fast. So it is not a case where the matter may be pending for years together. And I certainly don't think that there is such a hurry that you don't even want a scrutiny from the court.
And it's not one of those civil suits that will go on for 20 years, right?
Absolutely.
It's in the red courts, which
here
are
here and there.
Yeah.
And this is in the interest of the unit holders. If the scrutiny reveals that Franklin was not right, it is who is going to benefit? It's the unit holders who are going to benefit.
Okay.
And petitioners are unit holders, right? They are also investors. It's not
they
like
they're right.
Not. They have a right to challenge it. They have to be. They have to be considered. And the, also
I'm,
in
I'm
my petition
to, put it to rest. A scrutiny within a time frame of few months, I don't think that anyone would be prejudiced.
Okay. Okay. What else do you think SEBI could have done?
In hindsight, everyone becomes smarter. But
that's the whole issue. So we've also challenged the regulation. See, this is the first time that such a case has come up, right?
Yeah.
That you've wound up a scheme that has a mutual fund scheme. That regulation from 39 to 41 has never been subjected to an interpretation of the court. So we've actually challenged the regulations also based on the fact that interpretation has to be seen as to what, whether unit holders' consent is required, as Paritosh has also pointed out. 1815 consent has to be given a higher pedestal than the understanding of the trustees, because that is a right and an obligation of the trustees. A right of the unit holder and an obligation of the trustee.
And you've sent the notice to SEBI also, no, Abhinav?
Yes, we have sent the notice to SEBI also, and that is also there. Based on that, they've also given the investigation has also started. So, but all that is there. But this has to be settled for once and for all as to whether some few years down the line, whether somebody else can come up and say that we are going to wind up the scheme and how the process goes. We don't want such a situation to arise. So this case might jolt the whole confidence of investors, you know, in mutual funds. So we don't want that to happen, right? This law has to be settled once and for all.
And the forensic audit that SEBI has ordered, you know, some people are saying that it should have been a court monitored audit rather than a SEBI monitored audit.
I always believe that justice should also be seen to be done, you know. SEBI, when it's making statements, is obviously SEBI is the regulator and SEBI has to be given power. So they are obviously doing something. They've given it to an independent body to audit. So I'm sure they will come out with the right kind of, they'll do it independently. But court monitored will be more unbiased. Nobody can blame it. Nobody can, you know.
Whether the scrutiny should be by someone appointed by SEBI?
That's what some people are saying, that maybe it would have been better. Because, you know, all said and done, you know, when the winding up, see, mutual funds are tightly regulated by SEBI, all said and done, when the winding up would have happened, you never know. I mean, they could have, there's a likelihood that obviously they would have kept SEBI also in the loop, because it's a huge, huge thing that has happened about winding up of SIS. It's unprecedented. So you can't, I don't know, from my limited understanding, you cannot not keep SEBI in the loop when you take such a big step.
They are the regulators. Of course, yeah. They have to be in the group. Of course, they are the people. In fact, if you read the act, if you read the regulations, SEBIs are supposed to be the body which is protecting the interest of the investors. Now, to the best of my knowledge, if at all some grievance has come into the market, is only on account of the last order which was passed, where SEBI was outrightly supporting Franklin. Instead of investigating into what is the correct legal position, it came off as if SEBI was outrightly supporting Franklin. So I guess that may be one of the reasons why some of the investors feel that there should be an independent inquiry. But as of right now, I do not think that someone should doubt whether SEBI is supporting Franklin or not, whether they're looking out for the investors' interest or not. They are the regulatory body. They, of course, have to be the paramount person who should be looking into the entire affairs of the industry. But at the same time, there's a settled principle, as Abhinav said, that Caesar's wife should be beyond reproach. But the point being that if anyways there are a lot of allegations that SEBI did not take care of the investors' interests, in such circumstances, an independent inquiry may only clear the doubts and at least remove whatever apprehensions that the investors are having.
Okay, so you all are looking forward to the SEBI audit results now?
Of course, absolutely. So pivotal to the case.
Okay.
And it is not the case that after the forensic report comes, if supposing, because lot of petitions you would have seen, there are various instances highlighted. So we are today we don't know what this audit report is. We don't know the terms of reference for this audit report. What information have been called for? What is being scrutinized by CHOCSI and CHOCSI? We are not very sure. So the scope of inquiry that is going to be done, we are still in a phase of assuming.
The report will be made public. So we will be able to see after all, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So it's only when the report comes. Today we are not sure, because in some places SEBI is saying it's a forensic report. Some places they're calling it a special audit. So we are not really sure as to what the entire scope of that reference is.
Okay.
Yes. So it is possible that a lot of issues that we have raised may be considered, may not be considered. So we'll have to wait and see what the outcome of the report is.
Okay. Okay, so thank you, Paritosh, and thank you, Abhinav. Thank you both guys very much for joining us. We hope that, you know, this comes to a quick resolution and every investor leaves it doesn't leave a sour taste in investors' mouth more than what it is already.
Thank you, Kazak. Thank you.
That's all from our side in this podcast. Keep listening to Simply Save, and we will continue our Franklin Templeton conversations as well as other important matters here. If you have any questions or feedback, just write in to us at mcpodcast@nw18.com. I repeat, it's mcpodcast@nw18.com. For more news, views and updates, log on to moneycontrol.com.